Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hattie Boydell podcast. I know a lot of you guys have been waiting for this one. I've certainly been waiting. This podcast that we're recording today was actually meant to be slipped in somewhere at the rush of the end of last year. But I'm actually really grateful that we took some time because time is always better. And we're actually coming into comp season in 2023. So for my guys and girls who are listening who are maybe competing for the first time, this is going to be a really helpful podcast for you. But even those seasoned professionals, those of you who have been competing for a few years, there's going to be a lot of really great things we are going to touch on today in terms of resources and things that you can actually even learn and take into your own experience and go, wow, yeah, that really resonates with me, and even reflect on maybe the improvements that you've been able to give to yourself after doing a number of different competitions, because the thing that experience gives us is so much more than just some information. Like, we learn so much through the doing. And, you know, I've been competing for 13 years, since 2011. And, you know, gosh, I really reflect back on the really tough times I had through competing. Because when I first started competing, there certainly wasn't community. There certainly wasn't the sisterhood or the camaraderie that we have now, which I'm so grateful for, because it really gives bodybuilding such a beautiful element. And it also helps us to be the better versions of ourselves, because as we support another, it encourages us to, you know, raise up to that standard as well. And when we all step on stage, we know we're raising the standard. And that's the glory, I think, the glory side of competing. But there's this other side that I wasn't aware of when I first started competing. It was a side that no one spoke about at all. I didn't have a coach either, so I was just really just learning everything in that moment. And something I say to my girls is, no one can prepare you for post-competition blues like going through it yourself, which can sound really scary, right? It can sound really, really scary. And we all start with the best intentions. I know I certainly did. But it doesn't always work out that way. So today's podcast, I have a very special person in my life. You will know this very sweet voice if you've listened to one of my other podcasts. It is the incredible Michelle Beatty, who is one of my best friends, my greatest mentors, and possibly my spirit animal. I have learned so much from this lady, and she has taught myself and so many people around me that mean so much to me amazing things, and she's a neuropsych. And so what we're going to speak about today is the experience of what comp prep brings on the level of our nervous system. So the parts of us that will show up that we're going to be like, yes, we love these parts, but then what actually happens after the show, which is what we talk about when post-competition blues. And then what does that mean for you in terms of how can you take this information, reflect on your own experience, and go, well, maybe this is what was happening and this might be a better resources. Because this sport is an amazing sport, but it can be really detrimental to the mental side, the self-love side, the relationship side, and it can be quite damaging. So we don't want it to be damaging. We want to kind of put you in the best position possible so that not only do you have information, you have resources, and then you can take that into your own experience and make sense of that. So Michelle, welcome back to the Hattie Boydell podcast. It was an absolute doozy, the first podcast we did together, and I'm so excited to do this one with you today. How are you feeling?
I'm so excited to be back, Hattie. I know we had a plan a couple of months ago. We were going to do this episode. That was about 3 weeks out from your last comp, your two this year. And what's so awesome about the fact that we have waited is you've been traveling around the United States. You've come full circle, and I think you're 5 weeks out from starting another prep. So what a great time for us to be having this conversation. I'm going to be bringing some neuroscience elements, and I know you're bringing such a host of experience from the 13 years of competing doing. So it's pretty exciting today.
I'm so excited about this podcast because when we bring experience and information together, it is so, so powerful. And I'm also grateful that we didn't do the podcast last year in the way that, and I think I had expressed this to you. I know I had definitely expressed this to my partner. And it was, you know, I'd taken a couple of years off competing before I competed again last year. So my last show was 2019. And then I competed again 2022 and I did two shows. And it was a really amazing prep. I was what I would say in self energy, which means that I was definitely in a really regulated state for a good, I'll say 85% of that prep. The last 3 weeks between each of the shows was a little challenging. But what I started to kind of think about was, how am I going to be after the show? I'm aware of post-competition blues, as I named at the beginning of this podcast when I first started competing in 2011. I knew nothing and I was thrown in the deep end and it was an absolute roller coaster. And I found that I couldn't follow a process. I was high and low all the time. I'd then try and out-exercise something, then I'd overeat. And I just found like I was in such a, you know, I felt all these really heavy emotions like guilt and shame and confusion and loss that I could no longer do this thing that I'd done so well for 12 weeks. You know, now 12 weeks seems so short. Now it's like a much longer time. And you know, 10 years later, when I go back into competing, you know, as I return back to the stage, I tuned in and I was like, okay, I wonder how it's going to be. I wonder how it's going to be. Am I going to come out the other side easy, or am I going to feelings and uncertainty going to resurface again? And I remember saying that and I was like, oh, I wonder how I'm going to be, because I'd been sitting in this physique doing two shows. I'd been sitting in this really impressive stage physique for a long time. So my body, my eyes had mapped out this physique. This is what happens. Our bodies map out our physiques. And when we make an initial change, we go, wow, oh my God. And we see it and we're like, celebrate it. And then you look at that thing for so long and your body goes, it doesn't see it anymore because it's now the new norm. It's the new level. It's the new foundation. And then you make another change and you go, oh my God, this new change. And so I'd realized I'd been sitting in this position for a long time. And I'm like, how am I going to be when the map goes the other way, right? When I start to transition out of being incredibly lean. And I also had the challenge of traveling for 6 weeks around the States after. And I thought, wow, I really need to exercise what I practice, like practice what I preach, exercise to my girls. It's not the environment that controls us. We control the environment. And I did a pretty good job in my eyes. And I actually came out smooth. Like I not once have focused on body fat increasing or nothing. I was like, wow, I really did a great job, but I earned that. And I, with experience, knew what was going to be coming for me. But also between 2011 and 2022, I'd built a really solid relationship with myself where I wasn't tied to a physique. I was tied to my process. Now, something that we teach our clients is you can be results driven, but all you get is the result. You can be process driven and you get everything the process brings. That is the success, the lessons, the falls, the mistakes, the practice, the practice, the practice, and essentially self-mastery. And that's not everyone's experience, right? So what I want to name to you all is there is light at the end of the tunnel. It's not always going to be this really horrible experience. If you're someone that has experienced post-comp blue in a really challenging way, I promise you it gets easier, but you have to do the work. So today we want to give you the skills and the tools to go, okay, well, I'm still at the beginning point. I still notice that I fall off the bandwagon as soon as I do a show. So what does that mean? And Michelle, I actually want to throw this to you because I know you have a little bit of an insight, and it is what actually happens to our nervous system. And it's not just with competing, it's goals in general. What possibly happens to our nervous system when we, one, set a really high pressure goal, which most goals should have pressure to it, right? And the other is what happens after the goalpost. Can you explain to us what happens in the nervous system?
I think to answer that question really clearly, we start with one of the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago, and that's around process. It's really great for us to be able to idolize what it is to stick to a process. But of course, these things don't happen by accident. You know, when you speak to earning your keep, Hattie, in the years and years and years of exercising what it is. You preach what it is we teach in the Sports Model Project. That is, what does it mean to stick to a process? And of course, from this end, from this lens, from the neuroscience lens, there are particular parts of the brain that switch online that are associated with our ability to map out a process, to be able to follow and execute steps in that process, and then be able to look back and evaluate how we went with that process. That's the top part of the brain. It's called the neocortex. I know in the last episode, we spoke a little bit about the prefrontal cortex, which is the front center. But the neocortex itself, which is our thinking brain, affords us the ability to future plan, reverse engineer the steps that it takes to get there, and then to execute these things one by one. This is the part of the brain that makes us inherently human. It's very different to animals. But in order to keep this part of the brain online, we have to manage our stress levels, right? And stress isn't always what we think it is. Sometimes our body can be incredibly stressed, and we'll talk about this a little bit in reference to your previous question. Sometimes our body can be incredibly stressed. We may not think we're stressed because that's quite normal for us, right? Or we might have parts of us that say, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. Anyone listening, I have always had that part. No problem. It's all good. We're all fine. Hattie, I think you probably have this part of your system too. Yep. It's one of the things that allows us to get through things, to stay with things, to push through things. What an amazing quality that we've got these parts of our system that afford us this ability. At the same time, with the compound of stress, this is something we call allostatic load. If you want to look something up and explore a little bit further, allostatic load is the accumulation of stress from any kind of signals coming into our nervous system. And when it becomes too much, our system moves into a state. We might know it as fight or flight, but there's actually a number of different survival defenses that show up, and it shuts down our thinking brain. It shuts down the part of the brain that allows us to future plan a process, stick to a process, follow through, and then reflect on a process. So when you're speaking to coming out of comp, Hattie, and what's required to be able to do that when stress is at its all-time high, coming from all different angles, the precursor to that is our ability to regulate internal stress in our nervous system. Yeah. We'll talk a bit more about that in a sec, but can I just check in with you around that before we answer your first question there? What's your sense of the things that might have helped this time around, keeping that part of the brain online? Your language for it is sticking to a process. What did you notice was different?
I mean, even between now and 2019, there was a huge difference. And is it just maturity in my own relationship with self? Possibly. Was it time away from the stage? Also possibly. I think that being able to know in a way what could be coming, what I've done in the past is possibly helpful as well. It's like, because you don't know what you don't know. So if you've never done a show before, you can hear people talk about it, but you haven't had an experience yet, right? And I do, you know, especially naming to my partner who had also just done a show, something I named to him early on was, I know we're traveling and I know, you know, we want to eat out, but for me, something that's very important to me is leading by example. And I guess also as I reflect, I wasn't like, I've got to be lean. It had nothing to do with that. I didn't even think about that. It was, I need to follow this process. I need to lead my girls by showing, not by telling, by showing. And, you know, there was an intensity to it because I really had to juggle some balls. Like, how do I, you know, eat out with my partner, make sure I'm not being, you know, too rigid, but also I need to honor this. And so I gave myself some flexibility in there. I gave myself some wiggle rooms. I asked myself, what do I know? What's the buffer that I can give myself in terms of honoring my process, flexibility to my partner? And something that he said to me back is like, no, I'm going to support you in that because it's going to encourage me to do the same, because we'd both come after shows and he's, you know, competed. That was his second year of competing. It's my 13th, you know. So there's a little bit of there's a gap in terms of experience in there and history in a way. And, you know, I laughed, it's not my first rodeo, but, you know, rodeos still fall off the, you know, the horse. And so I just really exercised some self-compassion. But I noticed that, like I said, it wasn't where I went wrong in the past was being so focused on trying to keep a physique. I was so body focused. Whereas now it was, how do I continue to stay process driven? How do I lead by example? How do I show, not tell? How do I honor the parts? It's like honoring all these different parts and going, well, what can I do? What am I willing to do? What's the buffer? What is good enough? And I think that was just really helpful in that process.
One of the things I love talking with you, Hattie, about is that every time you share an experience, I just notice my own brain, my own system going, if we could put your brain under an fMRI image.
Do it.
Yeah. And just see the different parts of the brain that are lighting up. Like what I heard from the lens there, from the neural lens, that is, as you were describing, post-comp, first thing you named was, I had social support. And I was really clear about naming that, being clear on what I might need, and recruiting the people around me to be able to help anchor. That's the first thing. And we know with the nervous system, social support is number one in order to keep us regulated, to reduce stress, but then as well increase our resilience to stress. Mm. So that was the first thing. The second thing was a driver that wasn't survival-based.
Yeah.
So I need to stay lean. These are the parts of the brain that are reflexive. They're very, very fast. They tend to take control of our nervous system. We tend to feel like the passenger of our system. It's the bottom part of the brain at the base of the skull, the brain stem. Whereas I heard you say, how can I lead by example? How can I show by doing? That question of how, which is curious, it's open, it's considered, there are options, it's engaging. That is the neocortex. That is the prefrontal cortex. The question of how could this happen? How could this work? How could I engage with this? We know under an fMRI image that that part of your brain would be lighting up, right? That's the part of the brain also that helps regulate the system. So those two things stand out to me. First is social support. You were all over it. The second one was curiosity and engagement in a process that wasn't super restrictive and that was always looking at, what do I need? What are the resources? What are helping me? What are the things rather that are helping me anchor? And how could I make this possible? The third thing I heard was that there was some optionality there, that it wasn't do or die, all or nothing, black or white. It was instead moment to moment, what's going to be the best thing? What do I know? One of the things we know about the nervous system is what we practice in low stakes, when things don't matter so much. That's what's going to be amplified when things are high stakes. Mm. So when there's space, when things are more relaxed, when things are calmer, when things are not super pressured, the things that we're doing, that's what's going to show up in more intense ways when the pressure cooker is on. So that 13 years, I mean, you've been competing for 13 years, but I know you've been an athlete, Hattie, for many, many years more than that. And low stakes, I know you track things all year round. Like, that's what shows up in high stakes. So just the accumulation of that over years and years, it's going to be your default pattern, plus social support, plus openness and keeping your neocortex online, plus optionality. What a powerful toolkit that you have there. I know there's more in there, but you can hear my excitement.
Yeah, I know.
Around what your brain and nervous system would have been doing. Yeah. I mean, how was that to hear back just from this lens? Because I know the ladies listening here that might want to compete or have competed in the past, we might not know what it is we're doing, why things are helpful or why things aren't so helpful. So of course, it's our hope that we're going to bring some insight to it. But how was it to hear just from this end, what your system was doing intuitively as well as consciously?
I mean, what's really interesting is I've been wanting to share this for quite a while on my social media because I did want to touch base and share, you know, I guess a part of me that was like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to be. You know, I'm in a way, I'm a role model for a lot of people, and role models still have challenges. And I was like, oh, gosh, you know, I can say all these things, but I don't know how I'm going to be. And so it was really nice to go, wow, all the work, all the practice, the self-mastery, and even just solidifying, I am so process-driven. Like, as I named, if you only focus on the result, all you get is the result. What comes after that? Well, we've missed a really big, important piece of the path, the self-mastery. When we set goals for ourselves, like, we should set goals that demand more from us because they should encourage us to get educated, to learn something, to reach out for help and to, as you said, be able to work backwards from something into a step-by-step piece, right? So it's one thing at a time. That's what every day is. It's one thing at a time. That's all you can do. And what I realized is that because I took away the outcome, which at the end of the day on show day is not, I can't control that. I can just control how I am. And I can only control what I do every single day leading into that. Did I honor myself? Did I honor the goal and the reason of my goal? Like, it's almost like self-respect. Did I respect myself and my goal every single day? I did. And it wasn't about the end piece. I walked out on stage on my second show and I said, I don't care what happens. I honored myself. And I felt like I'd won. And I think in ways that just made the after process, I just felt so accomplished. And I don't think I've ever experienced that for myself, not even when I won the world titles. So it was this really nice moment for myself. Now, like, I can't say would I've had the same experience. I guess what I've, as I reflect on my previous, I guess, preps, I don't think I've ever been in self-energy like I was this prep. So therefore, I had a really solid foundation coming out of that prep into, you know, the post-competition. But as you named earlier, Michelle, is these high stakes, this external pressure, it, you know, the nervous system goes into the part of us that gets it done. Right. If we all reflect back on maybe when you've done a photo shoot, Michelle, and you're like, got to get my training and my cardio, and then we reflect back onto comp prep. It's the same thing. Like getting ready for a photo shoot and getting ready for a show have some similarities, right? We have to track our nutrition. We have to train. We have to get cardio in. We measure our process. We measure our progress, all those things. There is a high stake in there, especially if you've never done a photo shoot before. And I know, Michelle, you've got one coming up. So I actually want to ask you, how are you feeling coming into your photo shoot? Do you notice anything in your nervous system?
Yeah, I mean, with my nervous system, Hattie, and you've been my coach for a really long time, one of the tools that I use to help regulate is to keep the stakes low and to remind myself that this thing that I'm doing is for the next thing. Mm. And there's something really interesting about that that I learned second to practicing it, right? I was in really high-level competitive speech and debate when I was younger as well. I know we talked about that last episode, but always keeping the stakes low in order to keep adrenaline low. Right. So anytime there's something big coming up, like this podcast, or like a big meeting, or like a business presentation, or like a talk, I know you're going to be doing a public talk, Hattie, a little bit later this week, or a photo shoot, or a comp, or whatever the big thing is that anyone listening here has coming up, you can feel the adrenaline in your body, right? All these little parts of you that are like, okay, it's go time. And then the ones that say, but what if? And then the other ones that go, but... And you can feel the adrenaline in your system, right? But we all have different resources to be able to help regulate that adrenaline. One of the ones for me, I love this question, is whatever this thing is, it's practice for the next one.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't even know what the next thing is, but there's something that's so settling about going, whatever this moment is, there's something that comes after. Mm. It's just building to something that's bigger or different or coming next. And coming off the answer to your previous question there, Hattie, that's engaging the part of the brain that helps regulate, right? The neocortex, the prefrontal cortex, that's the part of the brain that affords us the ability to imagine what's coming in the future.
Yeah.
It also allows us to analyze what's happened in the past, and it allows us to use that information to regulate intensity in the moment. It's the only part of the brain that allows us to do that. So while on social media, and mindset work, there's a lot of talk about being process-driven, which I think is fantastic. When we pull back the curtain of that, the reason it's effective is the only part of your brain that allows you to engage in that kind of process or imagine what comes after a comp or a photo shoot or whatever else it is the same part of the brain that regulates adrenaline. There are no coincidences here. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, we kind of fall into these things by accident. You know, I practiced some of that stuff when I was younger, just going, we're just having fun. It's just a game. It's all like, it doesn't matter so much. We're just doing the thing, right? And you might have some different tools around that as well. But at the same time, we're still engaging that same part of the brain that helps keep adrenaline just a little bit lower or considerably lower if it's a little bit more conscious.
Yeah. Michelle, I guess what I want to ask is, how can people best prepare themselves? Like if they've never competed before, they're still new to this journey, or they recognize they've got repeated patterns, what are some of the strategies or resources that they can use to prepare themselves to the drop-off after a show? Do you have any insight?
Definitely. So there are some things that are going to be specific to each individual.
Yeah.
The things that are going to help them resource and regulate. So we'd encourage, you know, experimentation, but particularly reaching out. If you're really struggling or have struggled in the past, reaching out to people who have experience in this, who have training in this, either psychologists or coaches or coaches. That have been doing preps or competitions for quite some time that have some skills and tools around this as well. It's really important that you're not doing this alone. That's number one. And I'll talk about the reasons behind that in a sec. But post-comp, not so different to any kind of stress that's occurring in the body and how the nervous system repairs itself. Mm. Right? You're in the gym, you break down a muscle, that's not when it grows. It grows when you step outside the gym, you're giving your body nutrients, you're giving your body rest and sleep, and then it will come back stronger. If you're missing those elements, your body breaks down. Mm. It doesn't get stronger, right? We know that. You're the expert in this area. I learned a lot of this stuff from you. But the same thing goes in, let's say, relationships. Mm-hmm. Relationships, the solidity of relationships.
The repair system.
Totally. Relationships, the quality of a relationship isn't determined by how often people are in conflict. Mm. Interestingly enough, if you look up Gottman, relationship theory, we talked about a little bit about that last time. It's actually what happens after. So same as a muscle in a gym that's broken down while you're in the gym. In a relationship, it's maybe breaking down an argument, but what happens after? If it gets the right nutrients, if you get rest and recovery, if you have a repair system for that, the relationship actually comes back stronger. Your nervous system is the same. You step into a class, university, school, whatever it is, you have a really intense bout of focus. Same with meditation. You tune into a particular part of the body or a particular sensation, and then the body needs to recover from that. Mm. So when we're looking at growth and recovery, there are a couple of things that will determine whether or not our system breaks down and gets weaker, and we experience that as not feeling so good, or the body breaks down and then gets stronger, and we experience that as feeling competent, resilient, and we get better. And those things are, one, the same thing that unites both of them, that determines left or right, stronger or weaker. I'm mindful of those words, but in this case, nervous system breaking down, some science language for us. First, we need a new stimulus. Mm-hmm. Right, the new stimulus, muscle, relationship, learning, in this case, a prep for a competition.
Yep.
The second is that under that stress, we need a bout of recovery.
Yep.
The bigger the stress, the longer the stress, the bigger the allostatic load, there's that word again, the longer the recovery that's needed to bounce back to normal.
Yep.
And then the third is a felt sense in our system that we are not experiencing these things alone.
Yeah.
That's a really big thing. There's a part of our brain and a part of our nervous system called the social engagement system. No matter how smart or clever you are, we need people around us. You need people around us, despite the parts that say you don't.
Mm.
We need people around us. Totally. That keep us regulated, that keep us feeling safe. This is primal. It's based on the reflexive system of the body. So it's absolutely necessary no matter how competent you are. It's a non-negotiable. Mm. So first we need a new stimulus. Next, we need recovery from that. And then the third, which is often missed, is that we need a felt sense that we're not doing it alone. That doesn't necessarily mean that people have to hold our hand the entire time, mm-hmm. because agency, being able to feel competent in doing things effectively, that's really important. But that we just have a sense, we don't have to figure it all out by ourselves, that we have a felt sense that we have a coach or a partner or friends or people who understand and can see and sense what it is we're going through. And that by default feeds into the level of recovery that we experience when we have something like a competition. Mm. So to zoom out before I throw it back to you there, Hattie, when it comes to competition, we've got a huge amount of stress coming in the body, right? We've got social stress, physical stress, emotional stress, nutrient stress. You can talk about the details of this in a sec. But with all of those over a long period of time, and then the high stakes of that, the level of adrenaline, the depletion in the body, we need huge amounts of recovery and huge amounts of social support. Those two anchors are going to be the determiners of whether or not we come out the other side feeling stronger and more resilient, or our system actually breaks down and we're feeling less good about ourselves, less competent, and then, of course, have some physiological complications just because our body's quite depleted.
Michelle, as you were talking about that, I was just thinking about, I guess, a lot of the girls that we've coached and I've coached and been a part of the Sports World Project, and even then my own kind of journey through this and reading girls, you know, obviously I'm exposed on social media, reading girls' difficult times. And, you know, something that we do at the Sports World Project is when we talk about goals, we ask the girls to reflect on, is this an ascending goal? So a goal that is positive and moves us towards something from a really solid and strong and healthy foundation? Or is it a band-aid goal? Is it, you know, just for a lot of girls, competing represents, I'm going to be disciplined, or I'm going to be beautiful, I'm going to be worthy, or I'm going to be this, and I'm going to be this, and I'm going to be this. And what they come to learn is after the show, that experience of what they thought it would be is not that. And that's where we see a lot of girls crash down. And, you know, as I reflect on the girls that I've worked with who have come out the other side really strong, really powerful, versus the girls that have not, I reflect on their why. And there's a similarity between the girls that came out healthy on the other side versus the girls that didn't. And so for all my listeners here, I think something that's really important is that when you're setting your goals, and this isn't just about competing, even though the topic is post-comp lose, is that, because we get it at any post, right? We get it at any goal, is why is emotional, which can be powerful, but in ways when you set a goal, you need to know what is driving you to do that goal. And if you think, or if you're doing the goal because you're asking, or you're trying to create qualities, or you think it's going to be the answer to something, most of the time it will not be that answer. The answer is somewhere else. There's maybe a few mountains that need to be climbed before we embark on the competition side of things, bodybuilding. The real goal of bodybuilding, or the real path of bodybuilding, is not to stay lean all year round. That's something else. That's another personal goal. That's a worthy thing, maybe. The truth about bodybuilding is you are going to build and you cut and you build and you cut and you build and you cut, and that is bodybuilding. So for the ladies that are there for self-improvement and they just want to build their bodies, a lot of them, they don't care about staying lean after the show, and they're the ones that are like process-driven, performance-driven. And we see them come out quite nicely on the side. Not saying there's no challenges involved, but there is what I've noticed is there is a really clear difference between A and B. And so what might be helpful for you guys listening is really be honest with why you're competing. Competing's not going anywhere. Like, it's actually only getting better. And if you allow yourself some time to tune inwards, we talk about working out, but we also have to work in, right? This is what we say at the Sports World Project. And building your own foundation of discipline and resilience and purpose and intention and love, and really building this relationship with yourself without the external pressure of something on the end, that is one of the best bases that you can then grow from to then do competing, because you want to start with a good relationship with yourself. Competing won't build that for you. It will shake it. It will, in ways for some people, destroy it. So I love bodybuilding. I love competing. I've thrived from it. In fact, the more I do it, the better I thrive. But I had to build a relationship with myself. You know, when I first started competing, it wasn't what it is now, right? And I can see black and white from when to where it is now. Like, wow, the relationship that I have with myself is so solid. And maybe that's a big part of why I come out, you know, pretty smoothly on top. But it's something that we learn over time. And I think, you know, again, as a resource, journal, write to yourself, get to know yourself. The why is great. It can be emotional, but the how is really important. And as you named, how is curious when it comes to being process driven. How, what can I do, is also something that I found is a really helpful question to ask myself through challenging times, because it just pulls it back to going, okay, what can I do and what am I willing to do? Right? And then I start to create a process. Michelle, what do you have anything you want to add on to what I just said around the like setting goals in general?
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's one of the things I love so much about these conversations, like I had said before, because it's always such a fascinating lens. Motivation, right? Which is the energy that drives us towards something or the energy that drives us away from something. Different parts of the brain light up and cause us to move away or to shift forward. And the actions that we might take, whether it's conscious or not, whether or not they're ones that we want to do or maybe don't want to do, they're all generated from which parts of the brain are activated based on the things that we want to achieve. Mm. Right? So there's some things that are unconscious, like I said, and some things that are conscious. But to simplify, when you were speaking there, Hattie, about a moving away from like a fear-based goal, there's a lot of factors there that ramp our adrenaline up, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't necessarily have a strong relationship with ourselves, or perhaps there are parts of us, and a lot of this goes under the radar, especially as we're younger. Hopefully we develop a better relationship with ourselves as we go older, but we just need some time, right? We just need some sets and reps under the bar here. We need to be around people that help us learn these things. It's how we unlearn things and learn new things. But with this, you know, perhaps it's wanting to feel worthy, which is the number one deepest motivation of any human being on the planet. It's around worth.
I can definitely.
It is what keeps the world going round, right? It's why people congregate together. It's why parents respond to their children. It's why the cute little doughy faces of a little baby or a little puppy dog cause us to respond. It is the deepest motivation of anything, mm-hmm. is us feeling worthy. So one, that's not going away. But number two, if we've grown up in an environment or perhaps for whatever reason, we've had experiences that question that or cause us to question that, we may find ourselves, understandably so, right? Because we can't get away from this piece of wanting to feel worthy. We might find ourselves falling into spaces where we're getting that fed, right? If I do this thing, I will feel more worthy. Mm. If I am this thing, I will feel more worthy. If I just hit this mark and other people can see that and appreciate that, then I might feel more worthy, right? This is it's an honest thing for us to move into. It can be a great thing if we fall into the center of a space that's really healthy, but also, like you're speaking to, some environments can really challenge this. And if it's the only motivation, or if it's the motivation that if I stand up on stage or I hit this mark or whatever your goal is, if I hit this mark, then I'm going to feel different. There's such a charge of adrenaline to that. And such a level of fear. There's a structure of the brain called the amygdala, which is our fear center, and it causes our brainstem to switch online. Yeah. What happens when our brainstem switches online? That's the part of us that says, this is all or nothing. It's black and white. Mm. It's do or die. If this doesn't happen, then something bad is going to happen, right? And we can feel this either in the body or emotions, or maybe it's self-talk, or maybe other people notice us talking like this, the other parts of us. This doesn't make us bad, but it is a cue to let us know that there might be a fear-based motivation there. What can be really tricky is if the motivation is to get on stage and our amygdala is going off and it's very black and white and there's this disproportionate amount of adrenaline that's just being dumped into the body, right? Our activation in our system is so, so high. The allostatic load is considerably higher. Our ability to connect with anchors of social support is reduced. The parts of the brain that allow us to hold to a process and reverse engineer and future forecast what happens after, those parts of the brain are shut offline as well. So we're starting to see the accumulation effect of stress. Then when the event occurs and it finishes, there's no driver left. There's no external stimuli that can generate the energy in the body, in the mind, in emotions, in thoughts that keep us going tomorrow, right? And that makes sense from a logistic point of view. The thing ends and then now what? And I know you can speak to some gals who've had the experience of they got to stay in comp, they got to stay in prep to keep going. That's what's happening in the system. The system needs so much recovery from something like that, from a competition or a photo shoot or whatever it is. And at the same time, if the motivation is the event itself, when that motivation is gone, the system goes into full recovery mode, which is something we call hypoarousal. And that's where adrenaline drops right off, dopamine and serotonin drop right off. And we notice that everything slows down. Our thinking ability, our hormonal balance, increased need of sleep, lower motivation, mm-hmm. less motivation to connect with people, less motivation for work, getting in the gym, following a process, all of those things start to downregulate. We might call those the post-comp blues, but in effect, that's the system going, I don't have anything external to generate adrenaline anymore. I've been dumping adrenaline into the system for a long period of time. And now that that's not there, we're going into hibernation. So the first thing is it's totally normal to experience post-comp blues. That is, in effect, very, very low adrenaline after a long stint of it being very high, reduced capacity to reach out to anchors, which take energy. But then as well, without that external factor of longer-term motivation, like process-driven leadership, self-mastery, this thing for the next thing, the system doesn't have an anchor to be able to generate the energy to keep us going post-comp.
Yeah, and just as you say that, Michelle, I'm just like, this is what we hear of so often. And I think along with all of that is the feelings of guilt and shame and lost and confused and maybe not worthy again because can't follow the thing. And you know, I've used this word in the past, but not in reference to post-competition, but more in reference to strength. I used to be able to. And it's like, it can be quite demoralizing as well. Cause it's like, it doesn't, all we do is just beat ourselves with that. I used to. And, I think something you named is like, it's really normal. And actually it is just your nervous system going, I need to repair. I can't push the way you kept pushing me. There's only, I had this amount and we went all in, right? All or nothing, all in. And now I'm going to give you nothing because I just actually need to repair. And I guess, you know, to reflect knowing, because I know all that and I knew all that. And so I think now, again, with my process is my training is like, all right, we're going into a general preparation phase. We are going low and slow. We are going from, you know, 6 days or 5 days of training down to four or three. It's like, I really know, okay, this is the recovery phase now. Like, how do I actually be soft on myself when I've pushed myself so hard? And I think for you girls and guys listening, after your show, it's like, no, I hope that after listening to this and learning this, you go, okay, if that's what is possibly going to happen or that's what I feel, maybe the steps that I'm going to take the next time I come into this phase, I'm going to be slow. I'm going to let myself be slow. Self-compassion is an internal resource, right? High standards of self-compassion just become self-bullying. So self-compassion, hey, I've just done this really amazing thing. Thank you, body. Touch meditation, thank you so much. You just did amazing things for me. I am so grateful for you. Now I'm just going to give you a little bit more time. Now I'm going to slow down. And you know, I think for a lot of girls, and I speak to girls because I coach a lot of girls, but any of the guys listening, you know, comp prep takes up a lot of time. And it's like, okay, now this time that you're going to now get, how can you use it in a way that is slow? Read, journal, sit in the sun, hang out with your friend, sit with your, like, let yourself be slow. Let yourself recover. Let yourself do all the things, feel all the things, and just say, this is okay. I think the part that a lot of girls and guys struggle with is the food sort of thing. And something we touched on the last podcast is, you know, food isn't a resource. It's a band-aid. It's like something that relieves a feeling or tension or pressure. Like when we're hungry, what do we want to do? Go eat. Right? When we're sad, what do we want to go do? What do we want to do? Eat something really yummy. You know, it's when we're, most of the time, most feelings are driven to food because it helps us in a way settle, but often doesn't settle us, you know, or later when we go, oh God, shouldn't have done that thing. Do you have any thoughts or any advice for those who are going to come into the challenge of trying not to use food as his resource after the show?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things to share on that. And the first is in response to a few things that you spoke to around the emotions that can come up. Mm. And off the back of my previous answer there, Hattie, when the system is recovering from a huge amount of adrenaline being dumped into the system. What goes up must come down. Mm-hmm. Sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system, inhale, exhale, break a muscle down, it's got to grow, right? These are the laws of how the system operates. We cannot bypass it, right? So we're seeing that also there's an emotional quality to it. You named a couple of things like shame, guilt, parts of us that say, I used to be, I should be, I'm supposed to be, the others are, right? These are the parts of us that are trying to generate adrenaline again, right? What happens for anyone listening? What happens when that little inner critic in your mind starts saying, you used to be this thing and now you're not, right?
She's a real bitch.
maybe the heart starts to beat. Maybe you hold your breath. Maybe there's a little feeling in the tummy. Maybe you sit up straighter. Sure. Maybe your eyes get a little bit wider. There's a little surge of adrenaline that comes from what we would call our inner critic. There's a purpose for the inner critic. And when we experience feelings like shame or guilt, these are drivers, that amygdala, that part of the brain that causes adrenaline to be released, it's impacted by this. Right? And our system is brilliant. If it doesn't necessarily have a longer term goal, if it doesn't necessarily have enough social support around, it's going to try and find ways to generate energy to keep going. Mm-hmm. Because based in survival, it is a lot safer to do things when you're lost in the forest by yourself without any support than it is to do nothing. Right? Our nervous system knows this. It's going to find ways to generate energy. In this case, the inner critic, or whatever word or language we have for it, is going to show up when our energy is very, very low in recovery mode, saying, you got to keep going. Mm. You got to keep going. So that little inner critic says, you used to be, you should have been. Mm. Super normal. Everyone's got one. Trying to bring some insight to why that shows up, that it actually plays a role, can be helpful. So I want to normalize that piece. Mm. But then how does that relate to food? When we're looking at restriction, post-comp, and these parts of the system playing into it. Right? They're saying you were doing that before, you were super diligent, you were following your macros, it was to a T when adrenaline was super, super high and we were 100% focused and putting in all that energy. When our system is very low in energy, one of the first things is it's just physiological. When you're tired and you're recovering and your body is super stressed, you just need more food.
Yeah.
Right? That's number one thing. So it's a resource in terms of replenishing. Our nervous system knows that. Number two, when neuromodulators are also low, right? So dopamine, serotonin, those types of things in the system, when they're low, food also gives us a hit of that.
Yeah.
It's going to give us not only the nutrient value energy, but also the neuromodulators that are released too. So when we're feeling quite low and slow, maybe shame or guilt is showing up, the inner critic is there, we're feeling a bit flat, we're going to reach for something that gives us just a little bit of spark, right? Because food is yummy. It tastes good. Yeah, something's coming up for you, Hattie.
Just as you're saying that, I guess, you know, this is why, and this is what's something that's really important, and I think you and I have spoken about this, is, you know, we tend to go for something that's going to be yummy. But often the food that we've considered really yummy is food that we've labeled in a way. And I think the circle, right, the hamster wheel is, I'm feeling low on energy and then I eat this thing and it, you know, I feel good, and then I go, oh no, I've eaten that thing that I've classified as bad. And then we go in this like really a washing machine of these emotions, because we've just gone and eaten something that we've considered bad, or that we've maybe have neglected from our diet because of, you know, low calories, being on a meal plan or whatever it is. And so that can get a little bit tricky in the mix, right?
Definitely. There's some conditioning in there, and then memories based around what feels good, what doesn't feel good, what's given us social encouragement, because that social engagement system in our brains is so, so strong that if we're getting accolades, if we're getting encouragement from people around us to perform at a certain level or look a certain way, then those layers are added in, right? So the relationship with food in our system is quite complex to begin with. We need energy. If our energy is low, we're going to reach for that. But then as well, it helps from can impact us from an emotional standpoint with the neuromodulators like dopamine and serotonin. But then you've got the social conditioning, and that's based on broader culture, but then as well what our experience is. So we're starting to then get layers in the brain and layers of memory that say, when we go low and slow, when we're recovering, when we are not moving at a million miles an hour, when our neuromodulators need a bit of a hit, then we're starting to engage in something that perhaps parts of us have for any period of time said that's dangerous or it's not allowed or we can't be relaxed around it. So it's starting to amp up that adrenaline even more in a time where your system needs recovery more than ever. So we're getting this really intense polarity. And I just saw the compassion come to your face there, Hattie, for me too. We're getting this really intense polarity post-comp where our system needs more recovery than ever before. To go slower, to have more nutrients coming in, to have more compassion, more social support than ever before. But then the layers of memory and conditioning that says we don't want and don't need to do any of that. In fact, the parts of us say we got to move away from it. And the pull between those, how is that experienced in the system? That might be a lot of flatness, a lot of anxiety, really strong inner critic. Moving in a cycle where our system needs recovery but keeps breaking down more and more and more. So there's some complex layers to it. I know there's more to it than what we're speaking today. The first is that it's really, really normal. The second is, and I know we spoke about this a couple of months, Hattie, and I'm glad I remembered this. The second is, although it's great that there's an opening of the conversation around this being normal, it's also not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just say everybody experiences it and therefore that's that.
Yeah.
In fact, that's just the start point. And I'm glad we're at that start point. But one of the things that we were hoping to get out of this conversation is to take that a step further and say, well, it doesn't really have to be that way.
Yeah.
And there might be elements that we can't bypass around physiological recovery, emotional and social recovery that we want to implement. But the level of drop off that most of the gals are experiencing, you have more experience with this than me, Hattie, so I'm interested to hear your take. But the level of drop-off and the level of intensity in post-comp blues, that is not necessary. It does not have to be that way. If we get closer to going, how do we prepare ourselves for this? How do we normalize? Not just that it happens, but instead understand the mechanisms as to how these things come up. And therefore prepare our resources, prepare a social network, prepare the anchors around us, process-driven, making sure we're taking good care of physiological needs, hormonal needs, biomechanic needs, and then setting up as best we can the spaces that we have with social support post-comp to go, okay, is this within normal range? How do I slow down? Not just slow down and stop, but how do I slow down? What does it look like? How do I reach out? What kind of support I have? The level of drop-off does not have to be as it is right now. So great, we're having the conversation, but you can hear it in my voice. Yeah. It's not enough. It's just the start.
You know, Michelle, just as you were speaking then, I'm like, oh, you just solidify something that I teach and I promote so heavily on my social media and with my girls. And that is, there's more to competing than just a 12-week or 16-week or 20-week diet. And this is why I'm going to circle back to goal setting. Why do you want to compete? What do you make it mean? What is the intention? Because that's going to create the intensity, right? That's going to create the experience. And then it's also not just going to create your experience while you're in it. It's certainly going to create your experience after it. And so the best thing, ladies and gentlemen, is that you can give yourself is time. And there are layers, you know, getting on stage is a multi-layering event. I've got girls, I said 2 years for you. And the moment you decide you want to compete is the moment your preparation starts. Now that means that you might have, you know, 6 months of maintenance or building or learning habits, right? Learning to track your nutrition, meditating, journaling, learning internal resources, developing a healthy relationship with yourself. Cool. That's the first 6 months. The next 6 months, we're going to go into a build. Now you're going to go to that next, you know, that next layer of relationship with self where now you're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to get heavy. You're going to now move away from this idea of what you think you should look like over here, and we're going to move into this part. And that might be actually not just 6 months, a year. Cool. But in that year, you're going to be learning a lot about yourself. You're going to be solidifying habits again. You're going to be getting strong. You're going to be process driven. You're going to be going, yeah, this is certainly what I want to do. I know my why. I'm building everything in my power, the relationship with myself, through internal process, through external processes. Yeah, cool. I've built this body now. Now I have 6 months of cutting. Cool. That's the next layer. And now I'm going to go and I'm going to learn what it feels like to be hungry, and learn what it feels like to be, you know, to honor the sacrifices that come with that next part of that journey. And then you get on stage. And in that year and a half, or that 2 years,
you have really showed yourself, yep, this is what I want to do. And then you go on that next 6 month phase, which is recovering, is reflecting on all the things you just did and go, well, how do I do it that little bit better this time? Wow, I really showed myself I can follow a process. This is bodybuilding is what I want to do. Getting on stage is what I want to do. And you're going to go through this repetition of these different processes and you're going to learn to do them better and better and better. But to circle back to what you said, Michelle, is this thing to get on stage is not 12 weeks. It's more than that. And this is why we're talking about today, because I want to expose to you all the different elements that it can that it takes to get on stage and to come out unscathed as much as possible. Of course, there's going to be challenges. It's a new experience. Sometimes we don't get what we want. We come up with all these other challenges, you know, along the way. But it's one thing to talk about post-competition blues, but it is the other to go, okay, well, what do we do about it? What is the bridge that takes us from after the show to living real life again? Because there's a bridge in between there. There's the recovery phase, right? There's the slowing down. There's the teaching of compassion, of self-compassion. There's, you know, there's allowing yourself to be a little bit slower. And then we build upon this thing because we can't just be, we can't always just be going up this mountain. What goes up has to come down. And we do this. But every time we do this, we go a little bit higher and we learn a little bit more and we evolve as a human mentally and physically. And that is the beautiful side of bodybuilding. Bodybuilding is so spiritual if you move away from it only being about the way you look.
You know, as I'm listening to you, Hattie, there's so many connections to the laws of how our nervous system learns.
Mm.
We spoke a little bit earlier about relationship and how important repair is after a rupture. But then also I'm reminded of the fact that all of us have been conditioned to a certain extent in our experience of learning, right, in traditional school, where we go in, we memorize some stuff, we take a test at the end of the year, and then it's done. And we do this year in and year out, year in and year out. Mm. And we know that this doesn't line up with how the system learns things.
Mm.
So you look at competition and how that lines up to relationship as well as our conditioning around learning in school. There's a honeymoon period,
mm.
right, in relationship. It's all fun. We're motivated. It's super playful. It's wonderful. I know you can speak to some other things that happen in there too. And then there's this middle piece that's like kind of stale or boring or not much is happening. It's safe. It's steady, but it doesn't give all those feelings at the beginning. And then maybe some big things happen. And let's say there's a rupture there and there's no repair, right? You get in an argument with your partner and then nothing happens after that. You can guarantee that our system is going to make up meaning that's going to be separate to our partner, but also we don't learn anything.
Mm.
Our system doesn't learn anything new, which is why we get stuck in cycles. Same thing in how we have experienced traditional learning at school. We memorize some stuff and then it's over. The consolidation piece activates the parts of the brain where we're asking the question, what was that like? When I stepped on stage and it was intense and it was overwhelming and it was the thing that I had dreamed about and envisioned for so long and it wasn't what I thought and it was better than I thought and it was worse than I thought and it was everything in between, when there's no conversation or opportunity for the system to not only repair but also make meaning on that experience, the system doesn't learn anything new.
Mm.
It just keeps defaulting to the old way. So when you're talking, Hattie, about the prep for the prep and then the prep for that, and then cutting down,
yep.
And then stepping on stage, that post-comp piece where gals are probably struggling the most, I can't guarantee that, but probably struggling the most, is actually the missed opportunity for our system to be able to grow and repair, but also make meaning out of something that we have committed to, invested in, our time, our energy, our money, our emotional hope and belief that we can and will be better and life can be different. And that drop off afterwards, I mean, my heart breaks when I talk about it because that's the piece that's going to allow us to drop into the meaning of something. We can't do it when there's a ton of adrenaline. We can't do it when we're experiencing the thing. It has to be after.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an element there in social support. And I know we do some of this work together, Hattie, in going, what was that like? What was tricky? What went well? What might we need? How do we build that up? And that's going to prepare us for the next go round, whatever that next thing is. It might be another comp or it might be that we can extrapolate that skill set and that process to apply to other things in our life. You can hear me getting really passionate about this piece. It's such a missed opportunity, that pocket of going, what was that like for you?
I think, and you know, something that I do with all my girls is I always check in. There's like regular check-in spots after the show. Hey, how are you doing? I'd love to hear your reflection of it. What do you feel you did really well? What you feel you could improve on? What are we working on next? What, and then also a piece of, this is what we're going to do right now. And we're doing this right now because of X, Y, and Z. And this is what we might experience. So as a coach, not only do I want to hear my client's reflection and I want to hear where they're at, I can also then bridge little pieces as to why or what or how, and then future pacing, which is important for a lot of people's systems, but also just getting to go, okay, this part here is really important and we're going to be really slow, because if we want this to happen over here, we need to make sure that this part here feels heard and seen and has love and care, because we've just done this really, really big thing. And I do feel like, you know, it's the piece of the puzzle that I think a lot of people miss, and we miss the opportunity of the repair phase because we're so driven on either sticking to thinking that we need to do what we're doing before or being so fear-based around what could happen next or what might happen next. And it does, it shoots off this adrenaline, but the system's like, I just need to recover. So I hope as everyone has listened today, they can reflect on themselves, or even, and like I said, it's not just competition, it's any goal, because we have goals require more from us. There's sacrifice, there's time, there's effort, there's money, there's a sense of self-worth. And I hope that you could take what you've learned from Michelle today and even some of my shares of experience and go, okay, I'm not crazy, because this is what Michelle does so perfectly. And all the times that I've gone, I sound like I'm crazy. And then she's going, no, well, actually what's happening in the nervous system, like, that just completely cuts that line for me. I go, oh, right. And then I can use that information and I can turn it into something, right? Whether it's a process, whether it's a resource, a reflection, an action. And it just makes things feel normal in a way, like normal and okay, I'm not alone. This is okay. This is what's happening. What can I do with it? Michelle, is there anything you want to add before we wrap this incredible podcast up for today?
Of course, there's always more. But the thing that's coming up for me now is a lot of the things that we're speaking to, Hattie, require resources, right? People who have certain skill levels or experience, people around us that have practiced some of these things ourselves. And especially when working with masters, they're going to be an expert in their domain. And I'm not an expert in comp, but I can definitely speak to the nervous system and how systems behave and engage with each other. Right. So we've got two people on a podcast today with years and years of experience colliding to bring you something that's really unique and really special. And yet it's only two people. So when we speak to some of these things, and I remember thinking this in my early 20s, like, how do I access all of the resources that are required to help make sure that my nutrition's on point, that my rest and recovery is on point, that my emotional well-being is on point, that I've got someone who knows what they're doing in biomechanics and periodizing a program and pre and post comp. Like, how do I access that with social support and people who are setting goals and supporting each other? Like, there's a lot there. And I know, Hattie, a big part of your journey has been connecting with so many people and then having the privilege of putting us all together.
Thank you, Michelle. Today was absolutely awesome. If you guys want to reach out, please do. And I hope, as I said, this was really helpful to you girls and guys who are just about to compete or have competed before and want to be able to improve their experience of themselves through their competition, but also after. I hope this podcast really landed for you. Michelle, it is always a pleasure. There's going to be so many more. There were so many things I was thinking, I'm like, oh my God, we've got to talk about this, but there's only a certain amount of time. So guys, stay tuned for the next episode and thank you so much for your time. Hope you all have a phenomenal day if you're listening to this today, and I'll speak to you all soon.
Love you, Hattie.
Love you. Bye.
The Hattie Boydell podcast is powered by Gut Performance, my daily non-negotiable for a happy and healthy gut. Head to gutperformance.com.au and use the word Hattie for a discount.